We're talking with Nick Redfern about Diary of Secrets, his new book tracing a long and twisted tale, very complicated, lots of characters, about the death of Marilyn Monroe, what she may have had in her secret diary, what secrets she was ready to spill, and did those secrets get her murdered? A lot of familiar UFO characters in this tale. We'll get to as many of those as we can, and then open up the phone lines in a little bit with my guest, Nick Redfern, here on Coast to Coast AM. Nick, before we jump back into some of the cast of characters, let's ask this question. Did Marilyn have a secret diary? Do you know what was in it?
Well, we do know for a fact that she did have an extensive diary, and there are rumors that it may have been more than one. But we know for sure that she did have one because Joe DiMaggio actually encouraged her when they were married to put together a diary, and just for forgetting the latest news and things they've done, and just have a good bunch of memories. But as she got more and more intrigued by politics and things like this. Then she got involved with the Kennedys. Then things started to go away from, the everyday things she was doing with Joe DiMaggio. And the diary went more down sort of a political situation and what the Kennedys were telling her. And that's when that particular diary became dangerous. Now, what we know about it for sure is that it was a lengthy one, and that when she died and she was taken to the morgue, a number of the morgue personnel who are still alive have gone on the record and said that when she was brought in, a lot of her possessions were brought in as well. And they said that the diary was within the morgue for 2 to 3 days, and then somebody came in, or people came in, and it was taken away. And as far as we know, nobody has seen that diary since that particular day.
Are there any volumes of her diaries that survived?
Not as far as we know, no, unfortunately. And, if we could find them, if anybody listening, it's one of those situations where that could really sort of open the whole thing up. Page 43 of the diary talks about Dorothy Kilgallen and UFOs. If that's what we got to see, well, that would confirm the other parts of the story. So, in other words, to actually have that particular diary would really, give more support to all the other parts of the story as well.
You never know. I mean, long-departed agent of some agency, three letters or otherwise, who stashed it somewhere, that happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you say that, because the document itself that one we started off with, what's intriguing about that is that when it reached Milo Spiriglio, this writer and private detective, what happened was that when Spiriglio was looking into this, it turned out that there was sort of a connection there as well between Spiriglio and searching for the diary as well. So, in other words, there were a lot of people looking for that diary over the years.
You got so many subplots and interesting characters in this. Guy Bannister pops up. Of course, anybody who's followed JFK lore, you've seen Oliver Stone's movie, Guy Bannister, portrayed as a sinister guy who may or may not have been involved in the assassination plot, but there is a UFO connection as well that you explore in this book.
Yeah, well, Guy Bannister was one of the key figures that many people in the JFK assassination research community were deeply suspicious of Guy Bannister. And for many years, he'd been an FBI agent. What a lot of people don't know is that Bannister actually did almost a dozen UFO investigations in 47 and 48 for J. Edgar Hoover. Bannister was literally one of the earliest FBI agents that did flying saucer investigations. And he also, he was given a classified overview, if you like, of the UFO subject at that period at a military base in Utah. And we don't know, to this day, we don't know what the debriefing was back then. Now, Bannister was also someone that was being watched closely by Jim Garrison, who was one of the key figures going after the assassins of JFK. And again, we have a connection because Garrison actually knew Bannister. So you've got a thread there. And there's also the controversial Maury Island UFO crash of 1947. And one of those that was involved was a guy named Fred Chrisman.
I know.
Fred Chrisman was actually one of the people that Jim Garrison thought was actually one of the gunmen at Dealey Plaza. So you've got all of these UFO JFK assassination threads all coming together in bizarre, but actually, you know, cementing the stories as well.
And the name Thomas Cantwell, which may or may not have been a real name, sounds like it wasn't. How does he fit in?
Well, Thomas Cantwell was almost what you would call kind of like a deep throat in All the President's Men, that kind of thing. The story of Marilyn and the UFO document really goes back to 1991, and we still don't know the full story. What we do know is that a man named Timothy Cooper, who isn't that active in the UFO scene to this day, but he was, and he said in the early 1990s that he was approached by two people, one called Thomas Cantwell and his daughter Selina. And according to Cooper, he was given, literally we're talking about stacks of documents talking about dead aliens, alien autopsies, crashed UFOs, and many of them had headings like Majestic 12 on and things like that, which a lot of people in ufology will know about. And the big question was Cooper being fed by Cantwell with real leaked stolen documents, kind of a situation where somebody would literally take these documents out of the Pentagon, that kind of situation, and then hand them over to people like Cooper? Or, you know, were they sort of highly crafted hoaxes? And again, we don't know. But I did a lot of research for Bob Wood, who's done a lot of research as well into the whole issue of Tim Cooper and all of these documents. And again, this is sort of a very similar situation. Documents that could be real, maybe they're not. Could they be somewhere in between? And somebody on the outside seems to be feeding them to certain people in ufology. And Cantwell, it was almost certainly an alias. But in saying that, as I said, I did a lot of work on this for Bob Wood. And when I did that, the amount of material that I was exposed to, I was in this hotel room in Orange County going through all this material, and it was just piles and piles. And I think I counted something like 14 different typefaces for the documents, which again is an intriguing thing. You know, it's not easy for most people to get their hands on 14 or 15 old-time, old-style typewriters. and put all these documents together on verifiable sort of 30 or 40 year old yellowing paper. So again, you know, we've got almost a parallel what was going on with Spiriglio and in relation to the Marilyn documents. We've got a similar situation with the Cantwheel documents, and also arguably with the MJ-12 documents that Stan Friedman championed for many, many years. You know, in all of these cases, you've got these shadowy figures, like I said, like Deep Throat in All the President's Men, and wanting to get these stories out. Now, do they want to get the stories out to sort of foggy, you know, to fog the situation even more, or are they trying to really give us something important that'll take us to the next level? And I think to a significant degree, you know, that's still kind of open a bit.
Let's talk about the Area 51 connection, because it's an interesting scenario that Marilyn was maybe spilling something about Roswell, but there's also mentions of a, quote, visit by JFK to a secret airbase where he was going to see something from outer space. Now, that story's been around for a long time. I pursued it on my end about he did make a visit to the Nevada test site, and there was an hour of time when he took a supposed helicopter tour where he was missing. He was gone for an hour.
Yeah.
And so it's an interesting angle. What do you make of it? And can you explain to the audience how it ties into the famous book and movie 7 Days in May?
Well, yeah. Well, one of the interesting things about this document that Spiriglio got his hands on, it talks about a visit that JFK made to what's described as a secret airbase. Now, some people have misinterpreted this. They've thought the document said that that something secret was being hidden. It wasn't. It was the base itself that was hidden. It was a secret base. That was the secret. And, of course, if you're going to think of or talk about a secret base, and that is the words that the document uses, you know, if you mention a secret base, you know, inevitably most people are going to think of Area 51. Now, Area 51 was around long before Marilyn was dead. You know, it wasn't of the size that it is now, but certainly, you know, it it started to be put together in the early 50s, and then, you know, when there were spy planes being built and flown, a lot of that was done out of Area 51, you know, but most people just didn't know much about that at all. However, in this document, it talks about this secret base. Now, what's intriguing is the date in this, 1962. Now, 1962, and we've got the secret base mentioned. Well, in the same time frame, a book was published, a novel called 7 Days in May. And it's a really good sort of intriguing suspense novel, which tells the story of a general in the U.S. military trying to find a way to overthrow the regular elected government, and instead, you know, there would be sort of like a militarized United States. And what's particularly intriguing is if you read the book, it talks about a secret base, not in Nevada like Area 51, but actually way down in South Texas, and it's known as Site Y. And if you read the book, Site Y is, there's no doubt, it's like a fictionalized version of Area 51. And don't forget, this novel was written in 1962. Now, what's also intriguing that the authors of the book, Charles Bailey and Fletcher Nebel, they actually knew President Kennedy, and Kennedy said to them that he wanted this book turned into a movie because Kennedy could see quite easily how there could be some sort of like a coup, and the military, there could be a military takeover. So President Kennedy wanted the story to come out, and he also wanted a movie made of it as well. But of course, he never got to see the movie, which was made in 1964. Kennedy never got to see the movie because he was killed in 63. Now, what's also intriguing here is that if you watch the movie 7 Days in May, made 2 years after Kennedy died, one of the characters played by Burt Lancaster, he's the guy who's overseeing this attempted coup, there's this big, huge map on the wall. And as the camera pans around where you can see the map, the three words you can see behind Burt Lancaster are Roswell, New Mexico, and which is a really bizarre situation. I mean, there's no way, of course, you know, that that someone like the authors or the TV company, you know, would have any knowledge of Roswell's New Mexico and being of any significance, and yet all of the pieces and that relate to the fictionalized version of Area 51, Site Y, this coup, and then of course in the movie, you know, you got references to Roswell, New Mexico, and Site Y looks just and sounds just like Area 51. Again, we've got this intriguing thing that actually parallels the secret base story 1962 in this document that Spiriglio got. So again, there's so many threads and leaves, quite complicated in some respects, but in other ways, the more you put the pieces together, the more you realize that you would need a bunch of people putting all this together for whatever obscure reasons.
You'd need a large conference room with a huge map and little pins that you could draw strings to try to figure out all the characters and how they put together. I'd love to see the movie and see that scene where you spend days and days trapped in a hotel room surrounded by stacks of documents. As I said at the beginning, for you, this personal journey, it has to be fun in a sense of all the different threads that you have to chase, but also frustrating, I would think.
Well, it is. In one sense, it is. I mean, one of the most important things, and the ones that sort of satisfying, is when you start to put the pieces together. You know, it's like when you see a jigsaw and there's 500 pieces and it's just a mess and a mass, you know. But bit by bit, you know, the jigsaw starts to come together. And that's kind of what happened with the book, you know, sort of hitting the road here, hitting the road there, speaking to some 85-year-old guy there about what he knew about Marilyn and UFOs. So, you know, it comes together well. Now, there are, admittedly, three or four different theories as to, you know, what the truth behind this document and the story is. You know, we've got like the Patel story, the hairdresser story I mentioned. We've got the document. And one of the most important things is the development in relation to Milo Spiriglio.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take a break. Nick, let's save that part, save that big part for right after this break, talking with Nick Redfern about Diary of Secrets, his book looking into the death of Marilyn Monroe and whether it had something to do with UFO secrets that she might spill. We'll be back with our final segment in a moment. We're talking with Nick Redfern about an excellent book, A Diary of Secrets, about the death of Marilyn Monroe, whether it had anything to do with UFOs, certainly a lot of sex and booze and drugs and murder plots and things of that sort. We're going to get into our final segment right after this, talk a little bit about this document, whether Nick thinks it's real or not, and then take your calls and questions about Marilyn Monroe and her death right after this on Coast to Coast. Nick, before we go to the phones, what if this document is real? What if Spiriglio's document is legit? I mean, how that plays out.
Yeah, that's a good question, because if the document is the real thing, then it does definitively and arguably tie in everything from Marilyn's death to her connections to the Kennedys, to the Kennedy assassination, Site Y, the fictionalized story, and you put all this together, and what we find is sort of a brand new piece of secret history would come tumbling out. And that's why I think it's so important. And just quickly before we go to the phones, one of the other things that surfaced while I was doing the research, I mentioned earlier about Milo Spriglio, this author and private detective. I actually, again, through the Freedom of Information Act, I got a copy of the CIA's file on Spriglio, and contained within it, it's not a huge file, it's about 40 pages altogether, but within that file, there are a number of newspaper clippings about Spriglio and what he was doing and when his next book was coming out. And somebody had taken a black marker, and every time the words secret diary or diary of secrets, somebody in the CIA had used a black marker and put a line underneath those words. And this was sort of as late as the 1980s and, early as the 1982 and through to 1989, and I'm still trying to get the more recent ones. But somebody in the CIA had a reason to use a black liner and just cover the word, a diary of secrets, secret diary. So that's an important thing, that the guy who had this document has a file opened on him by the CIA, no less.
As you well know, a lot of people have written about JFK's assassination, that it, too, was instigated by what he might say about UFOs. I don't know where you stand on that. There were a lot of reasons that people could have wanted JFK killed if it was, in fact, a conspiracy. Where are you on that one?
Well, I mean, in some respects, it parallels Marilyn's death. There were rumors that she'd been told about plans to kill Castro, to invade Cuba, and so on and so on. And with JFK, there are multiple reasons for people wanting her gone. For example, J. Edgar Hoover had no love for him at all, for Kennedy at all. There's theories it was the Russians that killed him, that it was the mafia. Or could it have been, that a bunch of people said, look, you want him gone, we want him gone, somebody else wants him gone, let's all just pull it together and never put anything to paper. We don't tell anybody, we just get the job done because we all want him gone. I could quite easily see a similar situation between Kennedy and Marilyn, which would be with her as well. We want her gone. She knows this, she knows about that. Let's just get rid of her. So I think, you could make that kind of mirror image between the two.
Well, before we go to the phones, I would say anybody out there whose dad left Marilyn Monroe's diary in the attic, I'd be willing to personally escort you to Christie's for the auction. It'd be great to have that thing. We'll start with East of the Rockies, Joe in Long Island. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Good. Yeah, thanks, George. Nick, want to ask you to do a comparison between Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen. Both of them seem to have enough going for them that they didn't need to veer into this dangerous territory. I think Dorothy had a lot of moxie and probably did recognize the dangers, but Marilyn maybe was just lured in by JFK and did not recognize how dangerous her situation was by comparison. But also, did they know each other? And did Dorothy, who had her own show and didn't need to do this stuff, did she also see some Nazi remnants involved in the CIA or any of this?
Yeah, well, regarding what you said, they weren't what I call Kilgallen and Marilyn. They weren't good friends, but they knew each other well. Particularly, you know, going to like celebrity events and like the Oscars and things like that. So, you know, there was that connection between the two of them. And so, you know, that's an important angle. But you're right. Yeah, I don't think she did know what she was getting into. But she found out too late, you know, sort of classic scenario.
Thanks, Joe. You do go into, I think it's wise to cover this base, the idea of hoax documents. I mean, anybody who spends as much time as you in the UFO world knows that there are documents of unknown provenance that pop up from time to time, and they take on a life of their own. But hoaxes do happen. You have some examples of it in the book of where they happen, sometimes for frivolous reasons, and sometimes maybe to throw everyone off the track, perhaps even involving foreign governments, right?
Yeah, well, there's two other angles I talk about in the book. One revolves around a woman named Lee Israel, and she was someone who wrote a book on Dorothy Kilgallen, and she was an author, and she went sort of like a downslide, and she decided she was going to make her money by fabricating documents, and she was actually arrested by the FBI in the early 1990s, and her story was actually made into a big books Hollywood movie called Can You Forgive Me, which is a really good movie of this woman. Started off as a straightforward author, respected. And then she gets into the world of fabricating documents. The big problem with that theory, I was actually quite intrigued by that that particular theory, as I note in the book. But the one problem is that we have things talking about Marilyn and UFOs pre Lee Israel, and in some cases like decades before she was on the scene. So that is one of the stumbling blocks, saying for sure that it was her. And I also talk about like Cold War era plots between the Russians and the US, creating documents to create sort of paranoia. One of the theories is that the Russians made the document as a means to make the US look bad, you know, from the perspective of the U.S. government, you know, must be terrible because they'd kill Marilyn Monroe, that kind of thing. But yeah, over the years, we know that there have been a significant number of questionable documents that may have been hoaxed, that may be the real thing. And sometimes it's done for, like, counterintelligence and psychological warfare, just to mess with the mind of the enemy, and maybe sometimes those documents get out into the public domain and we're not really sure what they are. But for me, like as I said in the book, you know, this story I don't think is going to go away now, because, you know, I've opened up so much material. So, you know, I'll just keep pushing and pushing and see where it goes from now. I'm certainly not going to stop. I'm just going to keep looking, and hopefully, you know, the documents, the additional sources, like the, you know, the people who knew something about it, hopefully we'll be able to expand it even further. And if that does happen, well, you know, we could see the whole thing just come tumbling out.
Well, it's too much fun to let it go now, right?
Well, that's true as well, yeah.
On the wild card line, John in Ohio. Hi, John. Good morning. You're on with Nick Redfern.
Hi. It's amazing. The title of Nick's book, Diary of Secrets, is amazingly similar to, I think, an amazing book by a top insider of the National Security Agency, which is sort of the mother huge CIA, even more secretive. And he unearthed not a speculation, but actually from other insiders, James Vanford, who wrote the book Body of Secrets, actual documents of the Pentagon and Joint Chiefs of Staff for a really shocking, evil plot by the deep state, the CIA and the Pentagon, to perpetrate false flag terrorism against American citizens, to shoot, have mass shootings of American citizens, bombings in American citizen, cities, all of it be falsely blamed and framed up against Cuba as a pretext for the United States to invade Cuba. Kennedy had just about the same timeline of the Marilyn Monroe affair, which would seem to intersect with it, realized that he was up against a really evil element who were planning very live plans to perpetrate these kinds of false flag terrorism against the American people, not just foreign elements. And he called it off, and he couldn't fire the Joint Chiefs of Staff who had signed these documents, which you can find in the article, the Gladio Crimes of the U.S. Empire, G-L-A-D-I-O, Crimes of the U.S. Empire. And it documents, actually, photo shoots of these documents signed by...
Okay, John, we're getting a little bit off the path. Yeah, Body of Secrets, that is an interesting comparison of the titles about the NSA. Nick, I own that book. You probably do, too. It is a coincidence, I guess, Diary of Secrets, Body of Secrets.
Yeah, it has been a long, long time, though, since I read it. Yeah, I think probably maybe 15 years, something like that, I think.
But I mean, that era of plots and framing Cuba for this and that, that kind of fits into the scenario. That's also a reason that some people think that JFK was killed, because he was going to dismantle CIA and and other intelligence agencies and end the Vietnam War.
One thing that a lot of people sort of forget is that, you know, some of these plots and programs and things that are going on, you know, they're not always sort of separate. You know, there's sort of like this blurring of programs, sometimes, not always, but sometimes between the agencies. You know, if it's at the advantage of this agency and this one, you know, they will work together and do this and do that. And so, you know, sometimes it's difficult, you know, when they're sort of working together, it's difficult to know who has initiated this or initiated that, because there's so many involved, you know.
Wayne in Chicago is on the wildcard line. Hi, Wayne. You're on with Nick Redfern.
Yes, thank you, George. I have one question for your guest. Also for you, because you're in Las Vegas. Has your guest ever heard anything about the mobster, Tony Spilotro, paying Marilyn Monroe a visit? And maybe you've heard it too, George. I don't know.
Well, I have heard the story. I don't know if it's true. I knew Spilotro and reported on him while he was still alive. And then after he was gone, and his murder and the trial of those Chicago mobsters who killed he and his brother. I have heard the story about him visiting Maryland, but it's one of a thousand stories you hear about who may have been involved. Nick, did you ever run across that name?
I'm not sure I did, actually.
I think maybe, I'm trying to remember.
What's the story?
It's this, that Spilotro was the one set to carry out the job to kill Maryland. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if it's Bill Burns who told that story or it was Paul Davids, but I had heard it before.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that story. I guess the only problem, you know, is when you're dealing with these stories, it's like so many parts of this story. It's incredibly difficult, sort of 50 years later, 60 years later, to really have sort of like a cohesive story beyond, you know, sort of, as I said earlier, like jigsaw pieces. And I think that's why, you know, so much of this story has gone by for so long, because people just haven't realized, you know, the approach they need to take, you know, to try and solve something like this.
Wayne, thanks for the call. You know, I'll have to look for the book where I heard that, or whether it was one of our earlier guests on Coast to Coast, but Tony Spilotro got blamed for a lot of murders. He was sort of an all-purpose assassin for unsolved murders, and I think he was suspected of 22 or 23 during his lifetime, and He never got convicted on any of them, as I recall. Nick, where would you go? What are the threads that you would still follow if you're going to solve this thing?
Well, that's a good question. I think, you know, the Freedom of Information Act, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, well, you know, the good stuff's hidden away and we'll never get it even through the Freedom of Information Act. But the fact is, you know, I got that study of assassination document that's really paralleled Marilyn's death, you know, with drugs and alcohol, and it's a CIA document. I got the CIA Spiraglio file, the FBI's file on Marilyn, and those documents are filled with significant material. So, number one, I will, you know, continue with the Freedom of Information Act because it actually really does work, you know. excuse me. And I would also follow, you know, this sort of Cold War era angle, you know, as if it would be, you know, something kind of, like I said, like a psychological warfare thing between two sides, you know, Soviets and the US back in the Cold War. But also, you know, I think it's still worth looking at Lee Israel and certainly the whole 7 days in May and that particular story and Site Y and the secret base that's mentioned. All of that, you know, for me, suggests we're dealing with, you know, a real story, real characters. And although, you know, there are times when I did wonder, maybe it is just a hoax. If it was just the document, you know, we had nothing else to go on, then it could be problematic. But we've got so many threads and leads that, for me, we've got a good story, a solid story, and I'll keep on looking until and hopefully get all the answers. I think we've got a good significant number of them already.
Nick Redfern, it's a great read, Diary of Secrets. I hope people check it out, and I hope you get to the end of the road on that one of these days. Thanks, as always. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, George.
Thanks also to Cheryl Costa. Her book, UFO Sightings, Desk Referenced 01 to 20, is pretty good stuff. Thanks to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Michael Cosio and Donna Walker, our producer, Chris Boros, our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, and Dan Galante. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday. Good night, everyone.